I am going to talk about API for the cloud, which is not exactly the same kind of thing that the API we were used to seeing in OGC in the last few years. There is things that are happening right now on the Google side, on Amazon side, on the European Union side, which is trying to solve problems in a different way than what we were trying used to do in OGC in the last year. Sorry.
Why don't you put the computer on the other side? Stand over here.
Okay.
There we go.
Yes, I was afraid of that.
I was afraid of that. There we go.
Okay. So, just a very quick reminder of what OGC is trying to do. We have data in different systems, made by different providers in different format, and we try to allow to use that, to allow the user to use, to mix all those data. For that, we need a common language and services. So this is the OGC mission for many years ago. They have been able, OGC got quite success, great success doing that on the website, on the website, using web specification. Basically, we send a request like that. So this is an example from the web map services specification, which is probably the most popular OGC specification out there. The request is sent on internet, on the web, and we get a document. It may be an image, a PNG file, an XML document, stuff like that. This is what OGC has done for 20 years, or at least 15 years, on the website. Now, if we take a look at the history of API, there is some trend where some language become popular at some time, then later it's becoming, the situation change, becoming something different. 20 years ago, remote procedure call was the big thing in computer. We were talking about CORBA, about Java remote method invocation on Microsoft. This is the COM stuff. And OGC was doing specification targeting those protocols. 20 years ago, OGC was targeting those protocols. Then we got a wave of web services. At some time, the popular thing was SOAP. Now the popular thing is REST. We try to describe that in a standard, we try to describe the API of those things in a standard way using Open API. But on the programming language side, not the web, it's not popular as the web today, but it still continues. This thing, the classical programming way is still always needed for different purposes. So now, in the last few years, we see more and more popularity of scripting language like JavaScript and Python. And this is the kind of API that Geo API try to target. So why those things are not the same? Why we don't have the same API for boot? Well, it's different world. When we do something on the web and when we do something using classical programming, the constraint are different. For example, when we use a web API, there is a transfer of data. We send a request to a server, we get back a document, except web processing services. I will talk about that later. And this transfer on the web can be a very large fraction of the process. Of course, it depends if the process is heavy or not. In this graph, I am giving an example for something which is relatively simple, just a Mercator projection. Just parsing a CSV file, apply a Mercator projection, and send the answer, the reply, something very simple. The cost of encoding and decoding the CSV file is by far the main part of the process. And this thing does not even count the time request for sending the data on internet. It's just on local, on a local computer. The actual process Especially if we try to do microservice or very small process, the process doing the really useful work can be a very small part compared to all the computation process needed for transferring, only for transferring the data. When we do a program in C# or in Java or in C++ or in JavaScript or in Python, all this encoding and decoding stuff do not exist. We usually just transfer a pointer in memory. Usually, maybe more complicated, but usually. So it's becoming an issue now. We were used to transfer data to the process, but it's not possible anymore with terabytes of data like what the space agency are collecting right now. So now there is a request to change the way we are handling, trying to resolve the problem. We do not want anymore to transfer the data to the process. We want to transfer the process to the data. As you said, it does not mean that we will never need to transfer data to process. We will still continue to have a need to transfer data to process. But it depends the size of the data. It depends where the process is. Both situations are needed. Even if we transfer the data, the process, to a remote machine like Google Earth Engine, the web services are still useful for getting the result when the process is done. WPS is a kind of hybrid situation. We do not really transfer a process. We transfer parameters for a process that is built on the server, predefined on the server, or we can use Docker image or stuff like that. But this is not exactly what Google Earth Engine is doing, for example, or what the Space Agency wants. So how do we bring an algorithm to data? The very heavy stuff was to set up a system virtual machine. It's long, costly to boot, it's not easy to do. Now, the thing that is quite popular at this time is to use Docker image. This is what OGC testbed are doing. We prepare a Docker image and we send that to a server. But it's still quite lightweight. It's not as cheap as just sending a function to a virtual machine, Java virtual machine that is already up and running. Also, it's not necessarily very efficient. For example, if you want to run a process on Google Earth Engine, it's very likely that the Google framework have their own library for accessing the data, which is more much efficient than if we try to read the data with JDAL, for example. In the Docker image approach, the scientist has to provide everything. So he will provide a library for reading the data, often the JDAL library or anything else. It may not be the most efficient library, as efficient as the library provided by the cloud provider. So, an example, if we go on the Google Earth Engine website, they have a document explaining how to use their framework, and they have examples of what to do and what to not do. So this is an example in the top, in the code in the top, the code is execute on the local machine, on the user machine. In the example in the bottom, the user is sending a function to the Google server, and the function will be executed on the Google machine. This way to send a function, this approach has many names. One name is lambda function. So for this talk, I call that lambda function. So this thing there, is a lambda function sent to a server. In this example, the code on the client side and the code on the server is not the same. It is done that way. It does not have to be done that way. It could be the same code on both sides. It depends how the things are done. There is another project. The Open Earth Observation Project, OpenIO, this is a project that has been funded by the European Union. This project is trying to provide a unified way to execute process on different engines. So if we use Google Earth Engine, we have to use the Google API. If we use Amazon or Azure from Microsoft, or S3, I don't know if they have a cloud, the API may be different. So OpenEO is trying to put an abstraction level on top of that for allowing a scientist to use the same API, no matter if they are executing the process on Google server or Amazon server or Microsoft server. So this is a quite new effort that they are doing on the European Union. But at this time, they are not following OGC standard. They have done their own API in their own way. So why they have done that way? Why not use OGC standard? At the beginning of the slide, I gave an example of OGC standard benefit to allow to get data from different providers. But there is another benefit from OGC standard. OGC standard are designed by experts. They are, for example, the preferencing by coordinate standard is the model is created by geodesists, by specialists. So the value of OGC standard is not only interoperability. It's also a blueprint. The abstract model of OGC standard are blueprint for designing, creating a good API. But we have to use the right OGC standard for that. This is the problem. There is many, many, many OGC standards. And user does not necessarily pick up the right standard for their need. So this is, in my opinion, this is what has happened with the OpenIO project that I mentioned a little bit before. When I asked them why they did not use OGC standard, they told me that they look at the WCS standard, Web Coverage Services, and find that it was not suitable to their need, too complicated to use. Yes, that's true, but WCS is designed for the web. It's not designed for a JavaScript or Python or programming language. And I give there an example. If we take the XML schema that are designed for the web, an operation which is very simple, which should be just that when we take, when we look at the model, at the abstract model, it becomes that thing on the left side when we try to create an API designed from the XML schema. XML schema are not UML. They are done for one thing, for the web. They do very well what they are designed for, transferring data on the web. They are not designed for creating an API for JavaScript or for Python or for Java. So JoAPI, I'm going to talk about JoAPI. It's an OGC standard that tries to create an API for Python, JavaScript, designed from OGC abstract model. But why do we need a standard API? We could say, I just need latitude and longitude. It's very simple. I don't need very complicated stuff.
You need sea level.
Sea level? Yes, I'm also going to talk about that in a few minutes. There, I have a slide on that a little bit later. So if we look on the EPLG database, there is about 50 ellipsoid in the database, more than 500 geodetic reference frame. A reference frame is an ellipsoid that is tied to the Earth in some specific place. About 500 different ways to interpret what is a latitude and longitude. So latitude and longitude, if we do not specify the coordinate reference system, it is ambiguous. There is an error up to 3 kilometers in some part of the world. The Réunion Island, for example, this is a place where the error is 3 kilometers. But we could say, I don't need all this complexity. Today, everyone uses WGS84. So let's just use WGS84 everywhere. Well, it's still not so simple. The Earth is moving. WGS 84 is an average for the world. It's tied to the center of the Earth. If you use, if you want to locate a point in Canada or in Europe, it's tied to the continental plate. The continental plate and the center of the Earth do not move in the same way. So, for example, a few years ago, we said it's very simple. Knight 83 and WGS 84 are the same. Yes, they were the same 30 years ago. Now there is one meter and a half difference between them, and it's still drifting. And the European system are using a different system. Even if we said, I just need WGS 84, which WGS 84? Now there is six WGS 84 with almost 2 meters difference between them. So which one are we talking about? Of course, we don't. Not everyone cares about a 2 meters error. The problem is that in many cases, people don't know what is their error. Another issue is that in USA, for example, a lot of boundaries are still defined in 927, an older reference frame. We could say, let's convert everything in the most modern frame. But a border which was straight in the old system is not necessarily straight in the new system, so it may cause some legal issue. Another example is the height, not exactly sea level, but the height above the ellipsoid. Because the WGS 84 is an average over all the world, it does not necessarily fit a particular place on Earth. So in some case, we can have, for example, a river flowing up. If we look at the height relative to the ellipsoid, it looks like the water is flowing in that direction where the height is increasing, because the WGS 84 is not a perfect fit everywhere. So the recommendation is to keep the data in the reference system DR, transform only when needed, and prefer the reference system defined by the mapping agency of the country where we are. So we could say, okay, but let's build a simple, very simple system. So a very simple approach would be to say, okay, let's still use WGS 84 as the pivot, convert everything to WGS 84 and then to something else. It does not work. In some case, using WGS 84 as a pivot can only put error in the coordinate. This is, well, for those who want to know more, this is what we call early banding or late banding approach. So all this stuff about map projection is actually a very small part of referencing by coordinate engine. So this is the code of Apache SIS, Apache Spatial Information System, only the referencing module. I'm not even talking about metadata or all other modules. If we look just at the referencing engine, the map projection part of the code, the map projection problem is a very small part of the code. The locating a point on Earth is something much wider, much bigger than just map projection. So this is all this explication was to encourage people to use an existing library. The problem is which one? There is Rochefort, there is Apache SIS, there is other library, and there is situation where sometimes we want to change from one library to the other. No library at this time is perfect for every purpose. So I have some story of people in the French Space Agency that wanted to use map server with another library than Rochefort because they were trying to do map projection on Mars or Venus or other planet, and Rochefort was not suiting their need for that. To make that possible, we need a C++ common API. We could also said, okay, I want to read an image. I just need a few metadata. So if we use CHEDAL, for example, CHEDAL can open any image in a vast amount of format, GeoTIFF, stuff like that, and provide those information. It can tell you what is the coordinate reference system of your image, the bounding box, stuff like that. So we could say, that's enough for my need. I just need that. Actually, when we do more data processing, there is much more metadata that we need to know. So there is a standard for that, which is also used by OGC. So this is some example of metadata which is defined by standard. Continuing there, there is about 400 property defined in this standard. So JEDAL does not read that. We made as a user who want to make some more advanced scientific work may want for some task, for some processing, use another library than JEDAL for getting those metadata. So he may want to be able to switch easily. So JOAPI is an OGC working group which try to define a standard programmatic API based on the OGC abstract model. One important point of JOAPI, JOAPI does not define new concept. So if a new concept need to be defined, it must be defined in another OGC standard. JOAPI take only the existing standard and just adapt them to a target programming language. And Apache SIS is a Java implementation of JOAPI. So we could represent that way. Actually, JEDAL is a kind of JOAPI in their world. So JEDAL is a common API for accessing different libraries, PNG, Cephal, stuff like that. But JEDAL is not a standard API, it's their own API, and they don't read a lot of metadata. JOAPI is trying to reach more software to be applicable not only to JEDAL, but also to other projects, and to follow the OGC standard. And then we can use that with different programming language. I will tell more in 1 minute. So one quick demo. I have shown this demo before. I have a very simple file with just coordinate to transform. A very simple Java program. I start the program, they said, give me a JOAPI implementation. I have none. So I am going to give Prochfor, which is the very, very popular Proch library. I just restart the application. I have not changed anything, no recompilation, nothing, just put the jar in the class path and it works. I can remove that, put another one. I restart. So now it's doing the work with another implementation. Some difference that we see compared to Prochfor. Compare does not provide any information about what is the accuracy of the operation, what is the domain of validity. So Apache SIS have this kind of information. Accuracy of 10 centimeters. So accuracy is not up to rounding error. Transformation have limited accuracy. The numbers are not exactly the same. I took this example on intent. It's an issue of early binding and late binding. We can put boot in the class path. It will run boot in the same time. So it's very useful if we want to compare the number. We can take an example of the NASA Space Shuttle. They have 5 computers running 2 different software, and they compare during the operation. Now, if we look what it may look like on a server, on a distant server, so this is Jupyter. It is a way to execute Python script or other language on a distant machine. This is what OpenIO project use, for example. So I will start with Prochfor. So I just run I just execute this thing. Sorry for that. I should have verified before. I will switch to the Java one and check later. Okay. Sorry for that. I should have checked the demo before, but I should have tried it before. But the idea is that we just change the import statement, and the rest of the code is the same. So it's not running now. It's probably a small thing. I did not try. I should have checked before the presentation. So those things, the important thing is that those lines come from the ISO 19115. It's not an API specific to Joe API. So metadata identification, citation, title is the standard way in the ISO 19115 specification to reach this information. So metadata scope, dimension name size. There is 400 properties, as I said. So this is an example of Python code, which is executed the same way, no matter the library which is behind that. An interesting thing is that Joe API, Apache SIS is a Java implementation. The code that I have executed, that I was supposed to execute, is in Python. We do not have a Python implementation of Apache SIS. One thing that Joe API provides, the Joe API provides Java Python bridge in two ways, in the two directions. So any Java implementation of Joe API is automatically a Python implementation of Joe API too, through the bridge, and the opposite way too. So it works in both directions. So just providing a Java implementation of Joe API is enough for using it from Python code in a Jupyter console. This is very similar to JDBC ODBC bridge. Okay, I am going to go fast on this code. This is just giving a small example of Java code that we can use in Apache SIS for getting a coordinate reference system in different way. One thing about Apache SIS is that Apache SIS try very hard to be accurate. I mean, when I said to be accurate, we cannot be fully accurate, but we should try to give an estimation of the accuracy. Many libraries apply a map projection and give the feeling that the projection is accurate to the decimal digit, up to rounding error. This is not true. Some transformations have 1 meter error or 2 meter error for a reason that has nothing to do with computer accuracy. So Apache SIS try very hard to send a warning to the user when something is probably going wrong in what the user specified. An example of code for applying coordinate transformation. One thing that Apache SIS do, which is quite unique to Apache SIS, for advanced user, it can not only transform, this is a standard symbol for latitude and a standard symbol for longitude. It does not only give the transformed, the projected coordinate for those two ones, but it can also provide a Jacobian matrix. So the Jacobian matrix tells to the user, if we move by 1 degree of latitude at this place, what is the displacement in meters? So this is the arrow that we see there. So what they are useful for? They allow more accurate transformation of envelope. So when we have a bounding box, which is a rectangle in one CRS, it looks like that in another CRS. So we need to find the red rectangle. We need to find where is the minimum of the projection. So this is a kind of computation that Jacobian matrix help to make faster and more accurately. So Apache SIS use that. The current state of a Joe API and Apache SIS is summarized there. So the current release of JoAPI, it's 3.0.1. So the current release of JoAPI is 3.0.1. And those things are proposed for a next release. And this is the SIS version that implement that. Actually, in the computer industry, there is SACOL sometimes. Sometimes old ideas come back in a different way. So the lambda function that I was talking at the beginning of the presentation actually was there 20 years ago. It was remote method invocation in Java or Corba at that time. And as I remember, OGC was targeting those things at that time. Basically, what we are seeing with lambda function that we send to a server, in some way, it is those technologies coming back in another way, in a different way. So, that's it.
Time for questions, if there's questions, discussions, otherwise.
Yes?
Not really a question, but when you go back for your discussion of CRSs, a great example of the world doesn't use the same one is the fact that China refuses to use WGS84.
Yes.
And uses BD09 and GJ. I forget what their two coordinate systems are that they use as a standard, but it's an interesting reference that the world of uses
yes.
a common system.
Yes, actually there is WGS84 is very popular because it is the system used by GPS, but the Russia has another system with another reference frame. Europe with the Galileo program is using yet another reference frame. And China, as you said, is even more complicated because they put some obscuration, some intentional random noise on their reference system for preventing too accurate localization.
Why?
They said for security reason.
Give me an example.
I have no idea. This is what they said. Ask to them.
No, but how could it?
We have to ask to them.
For the same reasons we keep tie tables secret at one time, accurate tie tables were all secret because it was a way to invade the other country. So people can use that.
I wouldn't have thought.
Yes?
Martin, you mentioned the lambda functions, MapReduce, another way, I suppose, another description.
Yeah.
Where do you see that emerging within what you do in terms of GeoAPI? Because clearly there is, from a distributed computing point of view, there's a lot of benefit that sort of approach gives you. So what's your vision? Where do you think that might progress for what you guys do?
Yes. In this lambda function, the operation that we are applying is very simple. It is just n plus 1. But the kind of lambda function that we may want to apply will be, give me the title, I have a bunch of image, give me the title or the bounding box of those image, or give me the pixel value at some localization, and I want to do some process on that. So we need, for a very simple thing, give me the bounding box, we need a standard name for the method to invoke to get the bounding box. And the proposal that I am doing is that those standard names exist. They are in ISO specification. So for example, it could be the ISO 19115 define an object called dataset. So on a Google server, we get a dataset object by whatever mean that give me this object. Then on data set, if I follow ISO 19115 standard, there should be a method called metadata. And then on metadata, we have another method called citation or identification info, citation, title. So we have a chain of method that we can evoke to get to the title of this data set. Then there is the same for the bounding box, for the band that we find in the image. So all those things have standard attributes. Of course, one objection that we can set to that, it's for the user, it's not always simple. So the example that I just gave, to get the title, we have to do metadata, identification info, citation, title. That's true. It's quite a long chain. But there is nothing preventing vendor or project to do convenience method. So the problem is that what is convenient for one user may not be convenient for another user. So this long path, metadata, identification info, citation, title, is quite long, but it's standard. And then a community can create a set of convenient methods, things that are convenient for them, for making that shorter, just alias, basically alias that point to that. And another community can create other things that are convenient for them.
That's a good point. I mean, that user community explains why WGS84 is so widely used. Because if I want to find where is the nearest coffee shop, the fact that WGS84 might be 1.5 meters out after 30 years
Yes, exactly. So this is another reason why we may want different library, is that I have many slides about the accuracy that 1 meter error, 2 meter error. That's true that for many cases, we don't care about the 2 errors error. The problem is not that there is an error. The problem is that in many cases in existing software, we don't know what the error is. So a good referencing library should be able to say, okay, I have made your map projection. Oh, by the way, the uncertainty is 1 meter. And then it's up to the user to decide 1 meter, okay, I don't care. Or if I am driving a Google car, no, 1 meter is important for me. So the problem is not to have error. The problem is to not know what the error is. And not all libraries provide this information, which is one reason why we may want the ability to change the library, depending if this information is important or not.
You speak of that as, and we'll take a question, and just clarify that should be a user choice, so the user should look at those errors and make a decision. Strikes me a lot of times the user wouldn't know how to make that choice, and so it comes back to the developers who are providing the software for a given set of use cases to make that choice. The developer makes that choice as opposed to the user.
Well, what the developer should provide, it should provide the information about what the accuracy is, because each quartz net operation have its own accuracy, can have its own accuracy. So some coordinate operation has 1 meter error for a reason that has nothing to do with the software. It's not the software fault. It is the coordinate operation, the intrinsic way the coordinate operation is defined, it has an error. Yes, exactly.
It's not the developer of GeoAPI, it's not the software.
But to make that possible, the implementation must be able to provide this information.
Yes.
And this is one thing that OGC standard do.
Can I use an analogy here? Imagine you want to write a presentation, a document, and your word processor starts asking you about kerning and ligatures. If you were a graphic designer, then you would care about those things, but you just want to produce a piece of text and you don't particularly care about kerning and ligature and all of those things. There are a lot of people in the world who would like to use geospatial technology that don't want to jump into the deep end and understand the backwater of reference systems. And those people don't even want to know what the error is. They just want to know that they're doing something that's reasonably okay. So the problem with all these standards is there's information overload for someone that who doesn't have geospatial in their job title. And we need to kind of provide a soft landing for those people that want to use geospatial, that don't want to be information overload of having to make choices about things that they don't understand. So you should provide that level of detail to people that want it, but also provide a lower level of detail and something reasonably safe and reasonably accurate for people that don't want to understand about kerning and ligature and all the stuff about prompts that most of us don't care about. Most of us are using Comic Sans and getting away with it.
Yes, but actually, the OGC ISO standards are aware of that. I give the example there that there is now 6 WGS 84 systems. So the guys who designed the ISO 19111 standard, they are well aware that not anyone would care about that, that many people would just continue to sell WGS 84. So they have introduced the concept of datum ensemble. They have introduced some mechanisms for hiding those things. For the developer of a map projection library, we are providing an API. It's a matter of documentation. So if I look, what this look like. It's in operation, actually. So, for example, every operation has a domain of validity there. They have also an accuracy. The developer who are not interested in this information can just ignore those methods. We could simplify this documentation by providing a basic view and an advanced view of the same documentation. So this is something that we hope to do in the future. But as I said, if you are not interested in this information, you can just ignore that. And we can provide profile for user community. So a community of people who really don't care about those information can define their own shortcut that ignore those information. But as we said before, what is convenient for one community or what is not important for one community may be important for another. So OGC is trying to make a standard allowing anyone to exchange information to each other. Then it is up to each community to make a profile of that suit their need.
Whereas if lat long and long lat are wrong, people die every year because of that. And so it's absolutely, and Ed is a leader of within OGC with respect to making them the standards more user friendly, web friendly, and exactly that community. The part that concerns me most is when people are making choices and they don't know that is a critical choice. How do you inform them without overloading them? Is that
Yeah, I mean, perhaps people can self-identify as I'm using it for these purposes or these purposes.
You'd
get a different API or perhaps a different introductory,
yep,
a different Hello World application depending on which community you belong to.
I think we do have to recognize the potential risk. You know, people may well have died from the use of Comic Sans in the past. You know,
it kills me every time I see it, but it
I think your point's a very good one in that, you know, we need to provide via convenience APIs, via education, saying, okay, you know, for the 90% of the population that just wants to be able to identify where they park their car or where Starbucks is, here's the simple way of doing that. But if you are doing autonomous vehicles or you're guiding missiles, there are other things that you need to deal with. But to recognize the fact that actually for 90% of the people, there's a relatively simple way that you can do this. I think, and from that point of view, the word processing analogy is quite a good one. You know, if you're producing a book, you do need to understand these things. If I'm writing a quick note to someone, this is all I need.
Additional questions, discussion? Yes, sir.
You know, you had two pieces of code, you know, the old method that you don't want to do and the recommended method. And the recommended method, it looks like a functional program, whereas the method the old method that you don't recommend just looks like a hand-coded thing. I mean, look at how beautiful the second paragraph is. You know what I mean?
Yes, but...
You're really helping the user out if you're telling them to program like that.
Well, it depends. It depends what the user, what is the background of the user. And in this case, what is recommended actually depends where the code is executed. The reason why...
But Martin, that represents parallel processing. That's why you're doing a map reduce. That's why it makes sense to do it that way. And again, understanding the user context and understanding the infrastructure that you're using. So that's the most appropriate method for that sort of computation.
Can I make a remark about this? So can you answer the question when you call the second one? What actually gets sent over the wire? Because in Java RMI in some cases, you actually send bytecode over the wire, and which is a security hazard and so forth. And that's problematic because you need a Java system on the other end to execute. A database, a SQL query is another form of functional programming.
Yes.
So, and that has the advantage that you're sending a string here, which is an algebraic representation of what is on the other set. On the other side is a system that understands that algebra, but might be a completely different architecture. And then it can take that query and it can implement it in whatever its own language is. So in this second one, are you sending a piece of Python bytecode or are you sending an algebraic representation?
This is JavaScript.
Sorry?
This is JavaScript.
It's JavaScript, okay.
Yes.
So what's getting sent over? It's not possible to send JavaScript. Oh, it's sending a JavaScript string over the wire, is that right?
I guess so. For this one, I cannot answer.
Maybe the better question, what you're actually looking for, is in the GeoAPI reference, in the GeoAPI implementation, when a client is sending a request over to a server, is that protocol well-defined and explicit so you can avoid things like injection of unknown requests or at least a bounded, limited amount of query capacity within any request?
GeoAPI does not define the protocol by which a request can be sent. It only defines the API. Then it is up to the provider to decide if they want to use remote method invocation or any other protocol. If an implementation chooses to send the bytecode, it's still possible to run that with a security manager enabled to restrict what the user can do?
My point is that for a lot of applications, better than sending a lambda function is sending an algebraic representation of what the query or without saying it needs to be executed with JavaScript. If you send an algebraic representation and the other side has ultimate freedom in how it's going to execute it, and parallelize it, and so forth.
We have to stop, but well, as I said, it depends on the language that that is used. I think one reason why Python is popular is that because it's an interpreted language, it may be easier for the server to implement some security check. Java, by code, also allow that, also make that possible if there is a security manager. C++ is more dangerous. But SQL is used also, and OGC have a language that is extending SQL, is called SQL.
So there's a coverage, SQL plus the coverage processing language with the raster extension, the array database extension. You're having a discussion we've had regularly about whether it's a security leak or not. That there's a,
but SQL is designed for querying data or for doing some simple, relatively simple operation compared to what we can do in a programming language. So programming language allow for more complex operation, for things that cannot be done in SQL. So both have their case.
Extended debate, I would imagine. But, thank you, Martin. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.